Good evening, welcome. Shir number 47, Yud Ches Adar, Tavshin Samach Zayin. Last week we discussed in Yehi Chavoyd and Pesukei Dezimra, that can be found on page 66 in the regular Arsul Siddur, or on page 30 in the blue Chaim Shlomo HaShalom Siddur, line number 3. Page 30, line number 3. So last week we discussed the advice from the Shlach HaKadosh of when a person does something of Atz Rabbas Machshavas B'Lavish V'Atzas Hashem Yisakum. There are many thoughts in man's mind, but it's Atzas Hashem Yisakum, but it's only the mindset of God, it's God's counsel that will really stay. Did one ever wonder why we only have one day of Purim? Maybe Hanukkah we have 8 days, Pesach 7, 8, right? Sukkot. Why is it only one day of Purim? Now, Shushan Purim. Well, it's, oh yeah, but we only celebrate one day. Nobody's thinking it's just too much wine to drink every day. I'm getting the looks like, what is he asking? What is he thinking? Okay, it's true. It's true. It might be a little too much. But the truth of the matter is, the message of Purim, like every Yontif, is supposed to be for every single day of the week, every single day of the year, in the month, of course, as well. And what was that message we discussed last week? The message of that Hashem's in charge of the world. We look at the world, we don't see things, we don't see things with the right picture. And for that, I think we deserve to spend some more time on the message of Purim before we continue with Ashrei. So we know, of course, we know the story with Purim was only a few days ago. No matter how much one drank, I don't think you could forget it. Just from a few days ago. And we know that there was a decree because of the two sins. One, just a quick recap, we discussed it a little last week. Because the Jews bowed down to the idol on days of Nebuchadnezzar, 55, 56 years later, they went and they enjoyed themselves by the party of Achashverosh. And I believe we mentioned that Mordechai was there to Misaki to correct the chait, the sin of bowing down to the idol in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, so he didn't bow down to Haman. And Esther, she was there to Misaki to correct the sin of the Jews enjoying from the banquet, from the Suda of Achashverosh. She did not get any pleasures from the palace. She had very little to eat, just the basics to survive. Interesting side point, I heard it shir recently, it was actually on Purim itself, from Rav Moshe Meir Weiss, Shlit in Staten Island, and he wants to say, from the Gemara in Megillah that says, that Moshe Rabbeinu knew everything. He knew Kol Torah Kulo. He knew what was going to be in the future as well. And the Mishnah Pirkei Avos tells us, Moshe Kivel Torah Min Sinai, Imsor LeYeshua, Moshe received the Torah Min Sinai from Har Sinai, he transmitted to Yeshua, Yeshua gave it to next, the Zakenim, Nevi'im, then they gave it to Anshei Nesach Doilo. And we know they said a few things. That's not for tonight. Who were one of the members of the Anshei Nesach Doilo? The men of the Great Assembly? Mordechai. That being the case, he wants to suggest, more than suggest, that Mordechai knew the Purim story before it happened. You heard this before? You like it? You like it? Okay. Seth likes it. Okay, you go on now. If he didn't, I had a problem. It says in the Megillah, Mordechai lo yichra. Mordechai will not bow down. It's a future tense. Now, grammar was never my specialty, but this one I can figure it out. Lo yichra is in the future. Why is it written in the future? So he wants to say because Moshe Rabbeinu had it. He saw the future. He saw what was going to be. So it was written down, Mordechai lo yichra. Mordechai will not bow down. And he has other proofs to bring at this point. That's why he explains it's called Megillas Esther. Because Esther didn't know anything about this. She's the one who was Moisin Nefesh. She gave of herself She might have gotten killed. She, who knows what might have happened? She didn't know.
Mordechai does say to
her. Mordechai does say to her to what?
He says, there will be Yeshua. Right?
There will be Yeshua. Right. Very good. Very good. The question is, are you going to be part of the Yeshua or not? Are you going to be part of that salvation? Will you be the reason, the underlying reason that the Jews will be redeemed? You like it a lot, I see. So, what was the great answer? What did Mordechai do? Mordechai, even though he knew, but first of all, he explains that certain things were written in codes. So he didn't know everything. But when he davened in a situation like he didn't know. With the same eslavus, with the same desire to daven to Hashem, that we need your help, we need your salvation. And he brought Klal Yisrael to that salvation. He said over, Why did Achashverosh hate the Jews so much? Right, many of us, we're told that Haman was the wicked man, Achashverosh was the fool. That's not the case. Achashverosh was a Rasha, mitchilot vat soifer, as we mentioned last week, he was a Rasha from beginning to end, as the second Rashi in the Megillah says. Why did he hate us so much? So, very simple answer, because... They bowed down to a different king. Well, that was years earlier. That was a good 55 years earlier. Correct. Yes, because Jews worship God, so the non-Jew is jealous.
Aren't you allowed to bow to the king?
Well, you're allowed to bow to the king if you're not bowing to him out of, if it's not an idol, just out of respect. Listen to this medrash, he says over, from the Aras Devash. Achashverosh had a dream constantly, again and again, the next king of Persia will be a Jew. That being the case, if he's going to be a Jew, that means the Jews will conquer him, defeat him. How else will the next king be a Jew? He would have never thought that he would be the father of that next king. Because his wife, not in a million years, would he have thought would be Jewish. So he hated the Jews, and he didn't want them to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So I just want to bring this back to the Tefillah share, because we're discussing Atzas HaShem Hisokum. The Gro of Vilna Goyen explains in the Yeshaya, in the Navi Yeshaya, that the Megillus Esther is from our Tefillah over here, in regards to the fact that it's Atzas HaShem, it's the counsel of God. Line number 3, page 30. It's Rabbi's Machshavas Blev Ish. It's page 66 we got him. Rabbi's Machshavas Blev Ish. V'atzas HaShem Hisokum. It's a counsel of Hashem that will endure. That's what's going to last. So continues the story. He goes here and Rabbi Moshe Meir... The Rav from Staten Island. So he says like this. He explains that Daryavish, who was the next son, interestingly he says, was around 6 years old when he ruled. We're not going to go through the math now, but he explains through the age of how old he was when he was born, and then how many years Achashverosh ruled. So a 6 year old was ruling the world. How do you understand that? Daryavish, the next Achashverosh's son. So, just quickly, and then we're going to go back to a different part of the Purim story. He says as follows.
That was Esther's son?
This is, I can't answer yes exactly, because that's what we're about to explain. The Gemara Megillah and the Taisus over there explains that after Esther was with Achashverosh, she would go and immerse herself and cleanse herself and go with, be with Mordechai in a marital way. The question that Taisus asks in the Gemara is that a person has to wait 3 months in between one husband and another husband, and between one wife and another wife. Why? In order to know who the father of the child is. So the answer Taisus gives is that there was a contraceptive used over there, and that was taken care of. Exactly who used it is another question. there's another mahalach, another way of understanding this, that Esther sent a shade, a demon, that looked like her. Maybe that's one of the other reasons why we dress up on Purim. The shade, the demon went, and that shade looked like Esther. His name was Moch. Moch is that contraceptive. And that shade was with Achashverosh. Daryovish, take the first and last letter, and what do you have? Reverse it. Shade. So, this child was half shade, half Achashverosh. So that's why he wants to say, that's how he was able to rule the world at 6 years old. Okay, this is coming from that Mahalach. Moshe Meir Weiss, wrote the Rubenstein on it. Let's go back to a different part of the Purim story. The son of... So he wants to explain that possibly, maybe, because it was a half-shade, this demon, and the first letter and last letter of is Dalet and Shin, the shade.
What would be the purpose?
Of what?
Of not having Esther running it directly.
Well, why would she want to be with this Rasha, this evil man?
Well, she was forced.
Yeah, okay, but she was forced.
She wasn't forced.
This tzaddikus, this righteous lady, would ideally not want to be with this evil man. That's the idea behind sending this someone else.
And this someone else would have conceived.
Well, that's what he wants to suggest in this whole. Let's continue.
Who's making this suggestion?
Oh, you're looking for it. There's no one over here. You're looking under the table here.
How could Esther have that power?
Oh, that's Yeah.
So who was it that was pregnant? The shade or Esther?
Well, according to that second way, it was this shade.
So the shade had an existence throughout that whole period.
Yeah, let's not get into it too much, because I cannot answer any questions about that. I'm just repeating something interesting which I heard.
Queen Esther's grandson built the
They gave granted permission to rebuild it, right?
Yeah.
The son, right. Right.
It's her grandson.
I think it was actually the son itself. Let's continue to the next stage. I don't get hung up on that. I don't have too many answers on Shadim, demons. It's not my forte. Let's go back to a regular part of the story. Haman is second command. Very wealthy. Everybody's bowing down to him. What happens is this one Jew who's not bowing down to him. And he doesn't even see it because his nose is so high up. He has to be told that this Mordechai is not bowing down. So then afterwards he finds out, he sees himself. He can't take it. It eats him up. He can't live with himself. He wants to kill him. The Gemara asks the question, Hama minatar minayin? Where do we find a rem as a hint, a discussion of Haman in the Torah? So what does the Gemara tell us? The Gemara tells us, Hamina Eitz, from the tree of the Eitz Adas, that first, the beginning, that first tree out there, not these trees aren't real, don't get confused. That first tree that Hashem said, don't eat from, that's where you find the rem is. So the question is, like, what's the Gemara doing here? Like, you know, Haman, Hamin, Haetz. You know, I think any, third grader maybe might be able to pull things out and put things here and there. So I just heard from a friend of mine a beautiful pshat. And he says like this. Let's go back to Haman once again. Haman had everything. He had everything a man could possibly want. Honor, wealth, position. He was missing one thing, that one little insignificant speck in his eyes, that Jew wouldn't bow down to him. That he couldn't bear, he couldn't take. Let's go back now to what the Gemara tells us. Hamina Eitz, Haman, Hamina Eitz is from the tree. The remez for Haman is don't eat from that tree. Hashem tells Adam Arishon, You could have the whole entire world is yours. That one tree. I tell you one commandment. Don't touch it. Don't eat from it. Don't touch it was the mistake. Don't eat from it. That is the connection. Beautiful connection. Haman, Hamin Ha'et, is from the tree. Now, the purpose of what we're learning here tonight is, as we said, to bring the emunah into every single day. So now let's apply this to ourselves. How many trees out there do we see that we would like also to take that fruit from that tree? Now, please don't raise your hand and answer. That's not what we're here for. But the point is to bring out from the message of the Purim story to incorporate into our everyday life that there are a lot of trees out there. Hashem says, that's not for us. That's not for this person, that's not for that person. And the story continues. So what happens? His wife Zeresh says to him, we'll make this big pole, hang Mordechai on it, go speak to Ahasuerus, as we discussed a little last week. So let's think once again. What were Klai Yisrael, what were they thinking when this big pole went up there? And they all knew that the Tzaddik Mordechai was supposed to be his head hanging from it. Nobody would think it's a good thing, as we mentioned last week. What were they thinking when Esther was taken? She didn't want to be there. Nobody was thinking it was a good thing. Oh, she's there, she'll save us. Not at all. They felt bad for her. They were thinking, how could this happen to a Jewish lady? To be taken to this Ahasuerus, this evil man. This lot, when Haman drew and it fell out on the month of Adar, by the time, the day that Moshe Rabbeinu died on, that month. So Haman was thinking, it's great for him. But Nahafayich, everything turned around. Haman was walking in the middle of the night, as we discussed. He's going to Ahasuerus to tell him, let's hang Mordechai. And once again, Ahasuerus hates the Jews as well. But he can't sleep, because Hashem is not allowing him to sleep. Atzas Hashem, he sokum. Let's not lose track of what we're discussing here. It's Atzas Hashem. Hashem is not allowing him to sleep. And then Haman says, you know what? Excuse me, Ahasuerus says, maybe I didn't repay somebody. Let's read the chronicles. Let's read the reports. And once again, we mentioned that Haman's son, one of his sons, is the advisor, the servant of Ahasuerus, and he's the one reading this report. And every time it comes to the place where Mordechai saved Ahasuerus' life, he skips over it. And the Malach makes it go back, skips over it, goes back. Finally, he's forced to read how Ahasuerus' life was saved by Mordechai. At the same time, we said the knock on the door comes in. Who is it? It's Haman. We didn't discuss this last week. We did? Not everybody was here. So, Haman is there, very, very excited. Haman ate that from that tree, that Mordechai, he will now be on that tree. And he wants to share the good news, the idea with his friend Ahasuerus. Why is he his friend? Because he wants to kill the Jews. That's why he's his friend. In the meantime, Ahasuerus asks him a question. What would you want to do to the man that the king finds favor in his eyes? And of course, Haman is thinking it's him. Who else would the king find favor but me? I'm the greatest person in the world. So, what does Haman say to do? Give him the king's crown, the king's horse, the king's cloak. Have someone pull him across on the horse and say, this is what will be done to the one the king finds favor in his eyes. So, what is Ahasuerus thinking? He wants my throne. Haman wants my throne. This is all, the ball is rolling now. As we mentioned, we touched on this last week. So Achashverosh tells him, go do it to Mordechai. And what happened? What did we say happened? No, then we must not have mentioned this last week, because if we said this last week, you would have remembered this part. He had a heart attack and died. Okay, now you remember. Okay. See, you see why it's important to review it? I feel better now. Haman. And Hashem said, you're not finished yet. Gave him life again. This I heard from explanation from Reb Rav Shlita, according to different commentators. They seem a little perplexed. Haman, imagine the scene. Haman, he couldn't take it. Imagine that scene. His arch enemy, the only reason why he can't smile. Haman can't smile because of Mordechai. And he's told now to go take Mordechai on the king's horse and take him down the street and say, this is what's going to happen to the king's, to the man that kings find favor in his eyes. He can't take it. He died. He had a heart attack. And Hashem said, no. You're going to suffer more. We're not finished with you yet. And after you suffer in this world, he suffered in the next world also as well. Trust me. So he's dragging Mordechai on the horse. And we know what happened next. His daughter took the bath water. And there's a few other things which we won't mention this place over here now. And she dumped it on his head. Of course, why? Because it was all of the Atzas Hashem. Hashem was pulling the strings. And when Hashem is pulling the strings in the Purim story, Hashem is pulling the strings in our everyday life. Many times we don't see it. Sometimes we're Zoicha, sometimes we merit. We do see how Hashem's pulling the strings. I have to mention this story. A friend of mine told me as follows. It was this past Yom Kippur. And he asked the Rav, how much longer until the break? Told him an hour. So they were by one of the most important parts of Musaf davening, the Yom Kippur Avodah. He had an idea. If I leave now and I go home now, I'll get 2 hours of rest. So that's what he did. He went home. He went to the garage to get the key where they keep that key when they're out of the house. He goes, he said, he does this, he did this hundreds and hundreds of times. Reaches back there, the hiding spot, takes the key out, starting to walk to the front of the house. He said he's done this once again, over and over again. He put the key there, his wife puts the key there, and what happens? He drops the key. He's looking on the ground, pushing things around. He said he was standing right in front of it. He dropped the key. He takes a rake. I don't know if he should have taken a rake. He starts moving things around. He can't find the key. An hour went by. His wife comes home and sees what he's doing. And she said, what are you doing over here? And he explained to her what happened. And she was cracking up. And she said, see, Hashem got you back. You thought you'd leave an hour earlier and get an hour extra sleep. It's an unbelievable story. Somebody that we know told me the story. It happened to him this past year. Atzas Hashem Hisokum. Hashem said, no, no. It's not going to happen. You think you're getting that extra hour of sleep? You're not getting an extra hour of sleep. And he said, to this day, he doesn't know what happened to that key. He never found it. Haman's daughter pours that stuff on his head, thinking it's Mordechai. And Haman picks up his head. And she jumped. She killed herself. From the fright of facing her father. During World War II, as we know, Hitler Yimach Shemoy descendant of Haman. He wanted to destroy us totally. But he wanted to make the library, the Jewish library. And he videoed, and he had Jews play out different yontifs. The yontif of Sukkot, they were in the sukkah, they made a sukkah. The yontif of Chanukah, they lit the menorah. He videoed this. They took pictures of this. And this would be part of the library that extinct that once was this Jewish nation. The nation he destroyed. He was building an atom bomb. I don't know how many people know this. I didn't know this until a few months and a half ago. Hitler was building an atom bomb and he wanted to drop it on America. That was his goal. One of his goals. And of course, his main war was with the Jews. Where was he building this atom bomb? In Scandinavia. He wouldn't build it in Germany. Towards the end of the war, the Americans and the British got wind of this. And they had pilots between the two of them bombing day and night, constantly. And they didn't know what they were bombing, these pilots. And then they were told afterwards, mission accomplished. And they were told what they just destroyed. Rav Revda Shlita said over this story once in the Kollel in Eretz Yisrael. Afterwards, someone came over to him and told him how his father was one of those bombers. And that's exactly what happened. If the bomb would have gone off, it would not have been a pretty sight. This is all a chelek of Rabbis Machshavos B'Levish. Man thinks, as they say, God laughs. Hitler said he's going to drop it. Hashem said, that's what you think. Another example of how Jews were spared and saved. The Mir Yeshiva. Around 300 Talmidim of the Yeshiva Smir. They were running away from the Nazis and they were in a town called Kobe in Kobe, Japan. Japanese and Nazis were working together. For some time, the yeshiva was in Kobe. And the Japanese kicked them out. And at the same time, they made their way to Shanghai. It was found afterwards that the Nazis were building gas chambers. And they wanted to use those gas chambers on those Talmidim from the Mir Yeshiva. Rabbi Yismach Shovas Blavish, Vatsas Hashem Yisokum. A man has many ideas of what he's going to do. But Hashem is going to make the final decision. Now, we don't always see, we don't always understand. They saw that big pole up there, and they said, how could this be good for us? But one of the main messages of Purim is Koma Davrach Manu L'Tov Avid. Everything Hashem does is for good. Even though we don't always see it. That's the message. That's how we're going to live with Purim. Not to drink every day like we drink on Purim. Not to hear the Megillah story every single day like we heard on Purim. Not to give the Shachmanos and the Suda, Matan Sev Yoinim. But the message, the main message of the Emuna and the Bitochen. And that's what the tefillah, that's what the siddur is here for. That when a person is davening to Hashem, it's to realize that only you, Hashem, can save me. You, Hashem, are worthwhile to praise because only you, Hashem, have the power. Yes.
In the Purim story, I heard quite some time ago that Esther expressed a reservation about saving the Jewish people. And Mordecai said to her, "You have the opportunity. This is your opportunity. If you accept, great. That would be wonderful, but if you don't, Hashem will see to it that it happens for someone else." Have you heard anything?
Well,
is that
basically pretty accurate. I mean, that's basically pretty accurate, because that's what we're saying, how Mordechai told her, "You have the opportunity now to save the Jews. If you choose to, so the salvation will very possibly come through you. But if you choose not to, you're going to forfeit your opportunity."
But it will happen.
But it will happen.
Which is in line with
what was being said earlier, right?
So she knew that she would fail.
Well, it's not so much that she knew she wouldn't fail. Mordechai was telling her, "Who knows?" He said to her, "If this is what you were placed there for, maybe this is the reason." And each one of us, we have to ask ourselves, what are we placed here for? Now, we're not put in the king's palace, so it's a little different. But each one of us, we are here also. When we encompass in each one of ourselves the connection to the spiritual worlds, and each time we do a mitzvah, we affect tremendous amounts. My 5-year-old just told me, he said, "Abba, you know, when I do a mitzvah, I make a malach." So I said, "Okay, let's do a mitzvah. Let's go to bed now." "No, I don't want to make one now." So that's a 5-year-old. But when we have this opportunity, and we have these opportunities all the time, tzaddik be'emunoso yichye, tzaddik will live with emuna. The tefillah, the siddur, is to emphasize to ourselves that we have this emuna, we can have this emuna. Hashem does not give us a test we cannot pass. Hashem didn't give the test to the Jews, the test which they didn't pass back then, and Hashem will not give us that test today as well. Yes?
Okay.
Beautiful.
Well,
it's not a contradiction that her age might have been 72, if that's what it said, and the fact that she looked beautiful. I'll tell you a beautiful pshat I heard from Moshe Meir Weiss still. He said as follows like this. Why did Mordechai tell her not to say what nation you're from? Because what happened? Let's go back to the beginning of the story now. Achashverosh is drunk. They're drunk as well. All the people by the party. And then the argument starts ensuing because they heard the women, she was making the party right next door, as we discussed last week. And they were saying the women from Paras are the most beautiful. And they said the women from Mada are the most beautiful. Finally, Achashverosh heard this and he said, "You're both wrong. My wife's not from Paras, not from Madai, you're both wrong." So Mordechai was concerned this could happen again. There's such a thing called Sunday night football, Monday night football. And I once had a plumber come to my house. I'm telling you, he had a few beers to drink before he came. No question about it. I mean, I offered him a drink, he said, "No, I just had one." I was thinking that's not what I meant, but I didn't want to tell him anything. So Mordechai said, "Don't say what nation you're from." Because he was concerned that this argument will ensue once again. And Achashverosh will say, "I'll tell you who's the most beautiful. My wife, she's Jewish. That's where she's from. She's a Jewish lady." And a different nace occurred that anybody who looked at her, she was perceived to be from their nation. So if a person from Asia would look at her, she would look like an Asian. A person from other countries would look at her, she would look like their countries. That's why they all claimed that she's from our country. And all of this took place behind the scenes. The message of Purim is behester, hester hidden, in the way that we don't see it. And that's the message from now until Mashiach comes, because there are times when we do see these open nisim, these miracles, as we mentioned the nase of that tefillin, the bank that blew up, and someone here told me that he was eating somewhere in Shabbos table, and he mentioned over the story about the tefillin being blown up. We all remember the story. You were here?
No, I
wasn't. Very, very quickly, my friend left a brand new pair of tefillin in a bag around 12 years ago by a bus stop. And they, in Eretz Yisrael, it's called Chavis Chashud, and they know they have to blow up the bag just in case, God forbid, it's a bomb. And they blew it up. The whole entire bag was blown up to smithereens. Not one thing left. Except for his tefillin. The tefillin were untouched. How do you understand it? Because there's a God in the world. So one of our members of our tefillah share, he said over this story by Shabbos Suda. And there was an Israeli lady at that meal. And she said, I read the story in the paper. I mean, I know it's true, so, because I know it was my friend. I didn't have to read the paper. So we have these open miracles that take place sometimes. We have to realize everything is a miracle. There's no such thing. God is in control of everything.
Can I get my little miracle?
I'm sorry?
I had one of those little miracles.
Okay.
Grandchild. Yeah, well, that wasn't me. That wasn't with me. My daughter got to help Hashem. This was about 3 years ago. I was just starting to do Shabbos. I needed to do something in the shower in the kids' bathroom. Needed to replace a washer because it was dripping. I've been thinking of doing it. I never got around to doing it.
Sound like the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly. So I had taken it. I had finally decided, okay, it's time to do it. And I started taking the pieces off the faucet. If you can picture a shower, it's a tile. The whole shower is tile all around, and the mechanism. For the thing that turns on and off,
the faucet.
Well, the faucet where it comes out, but the knob part, right?
Okay.
It's been there. It's 54 years old. You know, it's been wedged in there.
Right.
And
it's been there since the Nebuchadnezzar's time. You're saying,
right? And it's inside the tile, way inside, and I'm trying to figure out how in the world. Could I loosen that up? How could I get in there? Because there's no room. It's flat with the tile. So you can't really get in it. There's only a quarter inch of space between the metal, the pipe, and the tile. So anyway, I was thinking and thinking and thinking for a couple of weeks, trying to come up with some contraption to open this with. Then it's the hot water, so it's... was pretty rusted up in there and everything. So here it is, Yom Shabbat. I was went to services and I went home. I wasn't keeping Shabbat that strongly. I was going chetan anyways. But anyway, so I figured, let me see what I can do with this thing after services. And so I went over. With my hand. It just came undone right in my hand.
This is plumbing that's been sitting there for 54 years. Didn't need any tools. No pressure whatsoever. I just opened it with my bare hands, just like that. I was running down like it. I said, God doesn't want me to work. So I took it out and I left it.
I could give you the number of this plumber, though, in the future. He's a very good plumber.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good. That was really, I ended up not doing any work.
Any more work on Shabbos?
Shabbos, right. And I haven't done any work since then.
Baruch Hashem. So just to end, to conclude, we are approaching now the Yontif of Pesach. Pesach, the Yontif, when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, the Avdus, the Cheirus, the freedom. You have no free man unless he toils in Torah, in Torah. That's what Chazal tells us. The Avdus, the Cheirus. What is Cheirus? You only have a free man unless he is involved with Torah. We are told that you, Hashem, took us out of Mitzrayim, and we are now His servants. Hashem saves us from Haman. Hashem saves us from Paro. It's not a situation where we are saved and then we just go on with our everyday life. As you just told us, you realize something happened here, and you maybe shouldn't have done it on Shabbos in the first place.
That was the idea.
That you shouldn't have done it.
Should not have done it.
And from then, you would catch Shabbos even stronger.
Had I done it on Sunday, believe me, I would have had to tear down the wall to get it out. It would not have opened in my fingers.
But the point is over here is that Hashem is telling us, I took you out of Mitzrayim. I saved you from Haman. I want you to be free. How are you a free man? Be involved with my Torah. Be involved with the instruction book of the way of life. Next week we'll continue with the sip.